From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Could your houseplants use a tune-up after a hard winter indoors? I know mine will need it, from repotting to light pruning to full-scale rejuvenation in some cases, so I wanted to get expert advice. Today's guest has been growing houseplants since age 5, and the last 25 years he's been doing that not just at home, but also in the historic Longwood Gardens Conservatory in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, where he's the conservatory manager. More houseplant talk in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
In 25 years working in the conservatory at Longwood Gardens, Carl Gersons estimates he's seen more than a million pots of display plants, many of them species we think of as houseplants, move through its galleries as different seasonal shows were staged. Each one has to be exceptional to make the grade, the best varieties, and grown to perfection. So I know he has the answers on both fronts, on which plants to choose and how to care for them. Thanks for making time today, Carl, to mentor us.
It's my absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're a little plant mad, aren't you?
I think that would be an understatement. You know, I thought everyone was like me. I thought everyone collected plants from the age of 5. I thought everyone filled every windowsill and their car was covered in dirt, but maybe not everyone's like that.
We should say for people who haven't been to Longwood, that even at this time of year, you have exhibits on. There's one called Winter Wonder on right now, isn't there?
Absolutely. And, you know, being from Mississippi, growing up in a warm climate, moving to Pennsylvania, I thought that was going to be tough. But when you come to a place like Longwood, where it's perpetual springtime, especially in the conservatory, where there's something in bloom 365 days of the year, winter has really become my favorite season. We have flowers blooming that are completely unusual to those of us who only garden outdoors. And it's absolutely inspirational to see something that is not local, to see something that kind of takes you to a different part of the world.
Yeah. So we'll give links for people to find out about the Winter Wonder Show and just about Longwood in general. I mean, I think it's a must stop for anyone interested in plants as a destination. So houseplants, as we call them, those of us who don't have a conservatory. So step one in houseplant success is probably trying not to impulse buy just based on the pretty face of the picture that we see online, but maybe doing some advanced homework to see if it's a good match for us. Is that the idea?
Oh, it's so terribly true. Oftentimes, you know, we go to a grocery store or a garden center or any place we buy plants and we fall in love with it. And if we're one of those people that say, I'm going to make this work, do you really know what that means? Are you going to completely turn your life upside down? Are you going to change your light, your humidity, your temperature just for a plant? So maybe we need some self-reflection first and, you know, get to know yourself and get to know what conditions you have. And I think the first step is kind of, what am I looking for? You know, what is light? Everyone says, oh, my house is bright, but what is bright? Oh, my house is warm. Well, what is warm? So really trying to clarify what those conditions are so that we can match a plant to you and you truly will have success.
So, I mean, some of the toughest things, and I was saying in the introduction about, you know, winter, which is especially hard because we have the heat on. And I mean, my thermometer and humidity gauge in the house, I mean, sometimes when the heat's been on all day, it's like in the 20-something% of humidity. I mean, it's really dry. Right?
It totally is. And oftentimes too, when I'm, you know, changing my sweatshirt and you just feel the static electricity, that's a heads up that you probably got some dry air going on in that house. Yeah. And I was just talking to some of my students yesterday and they were asking, how do I grow this specific philodendron, this palm, you know, happily inside my home? And we were talking about ways to add humidity to your environment. And certainly the biggest way is a whole house humidifier. But even with that, you're barely going to hit 35-40%. Adding humidifying trays, you know, those large 12 plus inch pebble filled trays underneath all your plants, grouping plants together, but maybe even creating a plant room. So if you have a spare bedroom inside your home, maybe you're turning the heat vent off and it's just a little bit cooler than the rest of the house. And then Right. maybe you do have all of your plants in one spot, as opposed to kind of spreading them out through the entire house.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And are there also some plants that stand up better? I mean, like if we have to just face facts and that's what we have, at least part of the year is quite dry. Are there some that are more durable in the face of low humidity?
Well, talk about, you know, low-hanging fruit. So that's exactly right. Let's start with those plants that don't need all of that care, that don't require us to turn our lives upside down. And certainly the easiest plants are the ones, I think, with the funnest names. When you think about cast iron plant, well, that pretty much tells you what it's made of. It is almost indestructible. And I mean, this is a terrible name, but, you know, I learned it as a child, the mother-in-law's tongue, which perhaps has been renamed snake plant, but the Sansevierias are certainly super easy inside your home. And when you have a plant that thrives in your conditions, first of all, it looks beautiful, but you also feel a little bit better in that it's not only producing some fresh air for you, but you feel like you're being successful. So start with those plants that are almost going to guarantee success. And as you build up that confidence, then you can kind of branch into things that are a little bit more challenging.
So I know from, we just recently did a New York Times garden column together, and also from just seeing the displays and what's in the collection at Longwood and so forth. So when you get a, I think cast iron plant, is that Aspidistra, is that correct?
Yes.
And yeah,
yes.
And then if or a snake plant, a Sansevieria, Carl doesn't just go order any old, right? You still ask to like turn it up a notch, because I mean, after all, this is a world-class show you're putting on. So tell us a little bit about how we up our game with even these toughies like that.
Well, yeah, so many times too, I had a previous coworker that sometimes snubbed his nose at houseplants. He's like, that thing looks like it's from the 1970s. And I said, well, interestingly, you know, the 1970s are coming back. You know, people are liking the fashion styles and even some of the decor that came from it. But with these houseplants, you know, we don't just have to have the plain Jane green version. We can have truly exciting things. You know, more value is incorporated into anything if it's harder to find. So put a little effort forth, seek and find. Go to some of your favorite garden centers, your favorite websites. And as we mentioned, you know, networking through social media to get those cultivars that have a little zing to them. So things like Aspidistra can have a beautiful white stripe, or maybe even a white airbrushed tip. Cultivar Snowboy is one of my favorites.
Huh.
And that's, you know, readily available from places like Plant Delights Nursery in North Carolina, where they sell it as a garden plant. But for really the rest of us, it has to be a house plant. And it is absolutely incredible because each leaf looks like it's been hand colored, and you get that beautiful soft white brushing at the tip. It's not necessarily a hard edge. It's not necessarily a speckle. I mean, it really is artistic. And that's, you know, just one of my favorite selections, cultivars. Again, those things that you won't necessarily find at the average plant shop, but if you seek them out, they're certainly out there to be found.
I know you gave me the tip, speaking of the social media, you told me like if I wanted to find some of the things that you've talked to me about in our recent conversations for the Times article, you said, well, you know, put that name, that plant name, the genus and species, so to speak, in, or the common name, into like an Instagram search and see who all the total nuts are, the people who are obsessed with it. Find the like societies and the groups and the individuals who are, you know, have given themselves a name having to do with that, or who post pictures of that type of plant all the time. And those are your real insiders, and then network with them to see, you know, to learn about unusual varieties, but also sometimes tips on where to get them, right?
Absolutely. I have found so many like-minded people through social media just by searching for a single plant name. There is a asparagus, which I think we featured in the Times article, which has this incredible bright white new growth.
The fern, and like asparagus fern, like a, is it a foxtail? Is that the
it
one?
It is, yes, yeah. The foxtail asparagus fern. And that plant, you know, I was just in lust over the first time I saw it at the Philadelphia Flower Show. And I wanted that plant so badly. I'm like, where can I purchase one of these? I was willing to pay $2,000 for one of these things. I just decided it's going to be my entire, you know, paycheck. I'm just going to make this happen. And nowhere could I find anything for sale. So I might have been just doing some lamenting on Facebook and just sharing with whomever was following me at the time that, you know, I saw this plant at the flower show. I really would love to find a piece of it. I'm sad that I can't get it. And literally a person only 30 miles up the road messaged me and said, I have a piece that I can give you.
Wow.
And I literally almost fell off my chair. And it was that aha moment where you realize that you just have to ask. You just have to kind of put it out there and say what you want, whether I'm seeking this out or I need some help with this. And the world of social media, it's, I think, miraculous in that you've got these people from around the world that are, you know, willing to jump in and tell you what you need to know.
Right. There's one plant you've been growing, I guess you could call it like the rubber tree or something, that you've been growing for a really, that's the common name, a really long time. I think you've had them since practically childhood, different ones, but that you have an exceptional example of. So sort of as exceptional compared to the straight species, the plain green version, as that asparagus, that foxtail asparagus fern with its white new foliage was compared to the plain green one. So do you know what plant I'm talking about?
Oh my goodness, do I ever. All my little children, I have so many plant passions. And of course, if you kind of back it up, my coworkers tease me that I have this thing for variegation. I said, let's wait a minute. It's not just variegation. I have a thing for color.
Yes.
And I really love, I mean, red's my favorite color, and purple and orange and yellow, and actually white is my least favorite color. So when you think of variegation, we typically think of a green and white. So technically my variegates need to be, you know, of those more rich and intense colors. And certainly there is a rubber tree. There's a cultivar called Ruby that when I saw it for the first time, I mean, literally a warm rush must have gone over my body. And I was just thinking, this is the ultimate plant. It has got color from top to bottom. It has that color 365 days of the year. You know, a phrase that someone had told me years ago is, flowers are fleeting, but foliage is forever.
Yes.
And that is so true, because if you can fall in love with foliage that truly excites you, whether it be red, pink, striped, swirled, speckled, every time you look at it, you're going to get that pleasure. And I get that when I look at my rubber tree. That cultivar Ruby is just one of my favorites. And as a houseplant, it grows really well. Certainly with any ficus, they're going to have a change in leaf when they move, meaning they're probably going to drop some leaves if they go from bright to dark or wet to dry or warm to cold. But once they even out in your life, they're probably going to grow so well that you're going to have to think about rejuvenation or pruning. And that's when I became pretty daring when it came to how I handled my houseplants. I mean, this rubber tree is getting 5 feet tall in my 7 foot tall bedroom. You know, something's got to go. And it's not going to be the entire plant.
So let's digress then into some care, because I mean, it is, you know, we wouldn't do this in the dead of winter, but spring is approaching before we know it. Plants are waking up and noticing the longer light, days of and more intensity of light and so forth. So there is a time for some pruning, some cleaning up, some repotting, you do some hard rejuvenation with certain kinds of plants. So like a ficus, it could do it. You could. If it was just too big, you could give it a hard cutback. Is that what you're saying?
You certainly can. And I find so many times the people I'm dealing with, you know, even in my community or even with some of the students that I'm teaching, that we're often afraid to do pruning. And while I think that's probably true on woody plants that are outside, we don't need to be pruning our maples really hard. I mean, that's horrible to be cutting, you know, the tops out of some of our woody trees. That's just horrible. But as these houseplants go, we should think of them really more as perennials. And with our perennials, even like Caryopteris, you prune that back to kind of a nub in the fall or even in the late spring, and it completely regenerates from that. And you have a perfectly natural looking plant again. And I think that is the same with so many of our houseplants, including almost all the ficus. I've had great success with rubber trees, with the fiddle leaf fig, with the weeping fig, to the point they literally touch the ceiling. And I'm not buying a bigger house just to grow the plants. And I'm not going to make a bigger pot for it. So you have to make it work in the space and in the pot.
So other species of plants that might be good for this, like pothos, I would imagine you could do a hard cutback if it's just looking scraggly and nasty, right? Or if it's just
it's so true. And stringy. Oftentimes people seem like they're proud of their pothos when it starts to creep over the edge of the bar and up around the windowsill. I'm like, oh, no. We do not want this plant vining through our house. It needs to be full and bushy and, you know, almost look like it did when you bought it. Right. So cutting those things back sometimes to even 6 inches from the surface of the pot is perfectly fine for pothos and even some overgrown ficus. But you were kind of alluding to the fact that, you know, spring is coming and the light is getting more intense. The temperatures are getting warmer. So our plants are starting to respond more. And I would oftentimes say that, you know, April, May, great times to prune our houseplants back pretty hard and let them start to rejuvenate through the warm days of summer.
So not palms, I know that wouldn't be good. Who else could I do this with, though? So some other examples. Could I do it with like some of the dracaenas or?
Oh, so true. You know, when you buy your dracaenas, sometimes called corn plant, they're those giant canes that were grown, you know, in warmer areas. And you already look and they have a giant cut and they've got probably 3 stems coming off of them. And dracaenas are so easy to grow inside the home. I find that, you know, those things, when you purchase them, maybe they're 10, 12 inches worth of foliage, but then it stretches out to 2 feet, 3 feet, and it just starts to look silly. So you can literally prune those things back to within 2 inches of where they had started growing to the point there's no foliage left at all. And they will completely regenerate from that. And not only will they look full and lush, even within the first season, you have a chance now to play with rooting some of the cuttings you've taken off of there.
Really?
The tips of dracaenas and ficus, very fun to try to propagate. See if you can start a new one. Share those with friends and neighbors.
So that trunkish-like thing that I've just cut off, I do what to make it, to propagate it?
Definitely. So with the dracaena, let's just say you had a 2-foot stem you chopped off. I would take it down to about 12 inches at the top.
Okay.
Strip off some of the foliage at the bottom, and you're going to see those leaf scars where you pull the leaves off. And then if you have a humid environment, maybe that's going to be a container with a plastic bag over it.
Yeah.
You can leave the foliage intact and just kind of push it down in that barely moist media, peat-based with some perlite, some charcoal. Uh-huh. Keep it moist, keep it warm, and those things will root, you know, within a month or so.
Oh, that's crazy.
As long as it's nice and warm. And, you know, you'll be the crazy plant lady having all kinds of small baby plants here, there, and everywhere.
Wow.
But, you know, they make great gifts when people stop by and you can share your passion and you can share your story with someone else. And in turn, they'll have a story to share with the next generation as well.
Huh. I think you can do that with not exactly what you just described, but you can do a hard cutback rejuvenation of Scheflera also. Is that another one?
Scheflera's
that's a good one?
Great. That's another one that really grows well inside my home. There's 2 species that we oftentimes deal with. The smaller leafed version, they sometimes called arboricola. And then the larger leaf version, Actinophylla, and they'll have cultivar and trade names that go with them. But I have definitely played with Scheflera over the years, trimming them back to a nub, talking 2 inches from the soil surface. And they completely regenerate, nice, full, lush, bushy. And it just makes you feel fresh. And you know, your plant has kind of come back to the way it was. If only we could, you know, turn back time ourselves and have no longer, you know, our gray hair and our body aches. And if we could just rejuvenate ourselves like
I'd like to get a good cut back. Yeah, definitely. That's pretty funny. Excuse me. So one that I want to ask you about, because you have this incredible looking sort of holiday cactus, this variegated one. What in the course of being a parent to a holiday cactus, whether it's a Thanksgiving cactus or a Christmas cactus or whatever, What should we be doing through the year for that to make it happy and bloom and so forth? What's the sort of protocol? And what's the name of your variegated one that I've seen in pictures?
Oh my goodness, that variegated Thanksgiving cactus, the cultivar is called Norris. Norris variegated.
Norris.
And I got that from a wonderful plant guy up in Maine, Lord Acultural is the name of his company. But he has 300 cultivars, 300 named cultivars of holiday cactus. I didn't even know there were that many out there. I mean, I've been doing plants since I was a kid. I thought, you know, red, white, peach, pink.
Wow.
But it blew my mind that, you know, first of all, I fall in love with the flowers. They're just beautiful when they bloom in the winter. But again, if you've got foliage that is equally as interesting, the clades on there can be this beautiful buttery yellow. And one might be half yellow, one could be solid yellow. They're kind of a grayish green. I mean, each one's different. And of course, as you know, with holiday cactus, they have almost like those finger-like stems that come out, and it just looks like there's movement. And from a distance, the thing looks like it's blooming even before it has flowers on it. But working here at Longwood, I was unaware that those things would reliably bloom twice for us.
Oh.
So they always bloom in November, hence, you know, the Thanksgiving cactus is the most popular one. And we would just, you know, leave those baskets hanging in our conservatory and they would rebloom in March. Complete heavy flowering, just as if it were Thanksgiving. Strangest thing. I have no idea. Trying to, you know, figure out the science behind it. We know that we can manipulate holiday cactus to flower when we want them to. It really is a change in light levels in the fall. So once the nights get longer, that triggers them to bloom. Once it starts to cool off a little bit, that triggers them to bloom. So I have found that inside my home, I won't get reliable flowering around Thanksgiving if I have it in a room that I'm living in. Because you go in there and turn the lights on, and the plant thinks that it's a long day, it's summertime, and it may not be triggered to flower. Or perhaps in our homes, you know, we have that constant 68 to 72 degrees.
Right.
And the plant's like, oh, it's summertime. Why should I go into flowering mode?
I see. Okay.
So in order to trigger your Thanksgiving cactus, oftentimes I would say the guarantee is to put it into that unused bedroom where the light's not going to be turned on in the middle of the evening. And perhaps that room where you've turned the heat vent off and
okay.
It's actually going to chill down a little bit. You know, maybe that bedroom has a north-facing window that you sit your pot on the ledge, and just, you know, the natural coolness of the window will help trigger that into flowering.
And this is, you're saying put it in there all year round or put it in there at a certain time of year?
I think certainly in the fall. So between
September
and November, that's kind of the trigger time for those.
Okay.
But then once it finishes flowering, you can bring it back out into your regular living spaces, only because, and I have not been able to make my Thanksgiving cactus rebloom in March at home. It only
right.
does have Longwood. And again, I don't know what the trigger is. I'm going to have
you
to watch.
You have the
happening.
Magic mojo there at Longwood. So
we've got some pixie dust, I guess.
Yeah. So in the last 2 or 3 minutes, I want to just get some of the basics for sort of, like, you fertilize all year, and I had always stopped in the winter, in the low light season, but so you do sort of a weekly, W-E-A-K, weekly, is that what you do year round? You fertilize?
That's generally what I would suggest, because inside our homes, you know, it's that constant temperature. So that's not
right.
slowing the plants down.
Okay.
And while we could have lower light levels, you know, you might supplement with some grow lights, but, you know, just having that really weak solution all the time, I think, is pretty good. And remember, in between fertilizing your plants, you should always be leaching that soil out. So take it to the sink, better yet, take it to the shower and just rinse those leaves off and let that water flow through that media so it kind of cleans the soil out.
Okay.
Because, you know, fertilizer is made of salt. The salt can start to build up. And whenever you're washing that excess away, it's just kind of making it ready for the next round that the plant could then take up.
Right. And similarly, I mean, water-wise, if you have a water softener in your house, that can add some salts to your water. So that's not good water. What water do you recommend for watering houseplants?
It is so easy to just put a bucket outside, or if you have a large trash can that your rain gutter can kind of flow into. But even as a kid, I would collect rainwater. And I grew up on a farm. We had, you know, clean water around us, no problem. But rainwater is, it's magical. It really is. And that stuff is so good for plants. Certainly, if you're leaving your bucket outside, you know, it's going to be probably pretty cold. Just scoop some up, bring it inside, let it warm up to room temperature. And it's almost like, you know, revitalization. It's the fountain of youth for plants to let that rainwater come and clean out the soil and really start things afresh.
All really good advice. And the thing that I'm mad at you for, Carl, is that I'm going to have to go on a houseplant shopping binge because you make me want all these like variegated versions and so on and so forth. So I'll give a bunch of links and so forth with those suggestions in the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. But thank you for sharing all these tips and also some of the suggested varieties. They sound
absolute
gorgeous.
Absolute pleasure. I wish you luck in having room for all of your new houseplants. It's a wonderful addiction to have.
And happy Winter Wonder Show as well. I'll talk
to you again soon.
I hope. Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy houseplant tune-up meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.